talking to your kids about sex on this edition of Truth and Love. I'm Dale Johnson, and you're listening to Truth and Love, a podcast of the Association of Certified Biblical Counselors, where we seek to provide biblical solutions to the problems that people face. This week on the podcast, I have with me Dr. Scott Mell. Scott pastors Cornerstone Church of West LA. He's the managing director of the Institute for Biblical Counseling and Discipleship. He's a fellow with ACBC. He speaks and writes regularly on topics related to counseling and discipleship, and he's the author of Loving Messy People and his newest book, Redeeming Sex in Marriage. Scott, grateful for you, brother, and looking forward to our conversation today.
Grateful for you too, Dale. Thanks so much for having me.
Listen, thanks for writing this book, Redeeming Sex in Marriage. As a part of that, we've had previous conversation on the book specifically and some of its contents, but included in that, you give, I think, an important piece on talking to our kids about sexuality. I want to explore that a little bit today. I'm thinking even personal, to be transparent. I can remember with my oldest son being nervous as a dad, you know, having six kids, knowing, you know, my turn in all of this was coming, and he's 11. We're thinking, my wife and I are contemplating, like, okay, like, you know, how are we going to engage this? And, you know, as the topics come up and so on and so forth. And I remember, like, our context was a little bit different in that I just felt very compelled to go ahead and have conversation with him very early on. Part of it that was the impetus behind that was the Obergefell decision that happened in 2015, because I knew that was a moment that would change the landscape of sexuality in our country for a long time. And so I remember we took that afternoon when that decision went down, and I started to explain to him, you know, some of the aspects of God's design and how that in our country was being, we were divorcing ourselves from those realities, and trying to give him perspective on what the Bible says versus secular ideology. And we don't need to go into all that. Just a personal experience about what was an impetus for me with our oldest. And then now we have three kids at that age where, you know, we're constantly engaging on that level. So I'm intrigued to hear how you're going to describe some of this. And there is always a question. When do we start? Is there a magic age, right, that we start talking to our kids about sex? And listen, I'll just say, I teach about these realities publicly, and yet still, right, Scott, you can attest to this. It's no less awkward when you're one-on-one with your child and you're talking about some of these
Absolutely.
Issues. Even though they're very prevalent in the culture. So, okay, magic question. When should we start talking to our kids about sex?
Oh, man. So, Dale, I mean, to get there, I'll tell you, I'll confess as well. It's easier to write a book on sex than it is to talk to your kids about sex. From personal experience. I mean, because it is. I mean, it comes with that. With that tension, that difficulty, but the reality is, and this is where you spoke exactly to it. We need to take advantage of the opportunities that come up, and there will be countless opportunities because the world is teaching our kids about sex, right? And it doesn't matter. And this is actually, I think, really important for us. It doesn't matter how they're schooled. It doesn't matter if they go to public school, if they go to Christian private school. It doesn't even matter even if they're homeschooled. Our society's fundamental secular worldview is so shaped by the sexual revolution that it is impacting how our kids view and think about sex. But not only that, our kids' fallen hearts are also shaping how they view about sex, right? I mean, when a fallen heart that is bent in on itself discovers any source of pleasure, it instinctively uses it selfishly, right? And so even when they just discover sexual desire for the first time, their flesh instinctively uses it selfishly, and they don't need to be exposed to anything else for that to happen. And so I think as parents, it's our responsibility then to raise our kids with an understanding that's appropriate for each different age and stage of their development. This is why I love talking with people in our church about, not about having the talk, but about having the talks, plural, because inevitably and part of, I think, the pressure comes from us feeling the need to have a talk, as if one conversation is going to be able to encapsulate all of it. But what we get then is just opportunities to instruct them at different stages in ways that are appropriate to their different stages, to the different things they're dealing with, right? I mean, what a six-year-old needs to know about sex is very different than what a 16-year-old needs to know. And maybe to get to your question then, I do think that, you know, what a six-year-old needs to know, though, is more than nothing, right? It's more than, and this is why I encourage parents to begin having conversations about, even about just simply procreation, right? Like, babies are born, where babies come from, as early as 6 or 8 years old. Again, that's a little bit arbitrary, but it's going to depend on your kids. It's going to depend on their questions. But I say that because I think if we wait for puberty and have the conversation in response to puberty, we're too late, right? Right? Like they're already experiencing things without any guidance from us. Or if we wait for the questions that they have on the playground or at the park or at the school, right? And so I think the guidance I give to parents is talk early and talk often, right? A dozen 5-minute conversations are far more profitable than any one 60-minute conversation. I mean, you don't want to talk to your kids for 60 minutes straight about sex. Your kids don't want you to talk to them for 60 minutes straight about sex, but they are going to have questions that we can answer in 5 minutes. You know, and sometimes those 5-minute conversations go deeper. They have additional questions and you follow their lead in that. The general principles is I seek to be proactive and be persistent while recognizing that takes real intentionality as a parent. I know it takes real intentionality for me. Like I said, I mean, I wrote a book on the topic and sometimes that's an icebreaker for the kids. I'm like, hey, you guys want to talk about, you know, what I'm researching? But it's still, you know, when I get home from work on a Thursday, like it's not what I'm looking forward to doing. And so we have to be intentional about it.
Yeah, I like that intentionality and just paying attention to the things that your kids bring up or talk about. I mean, this can happen in 1,000 ways. It can be, you know, you bring a baby brother or sister home, and so the child start asking questions. It could be you have a pet that is expecting puppies, or, you know, maybe you live out on some sort of farm. I mean, you get the idea, right? Where a kid is bringing their curiosity. And I try to say, especially at young ages, where you're addressing a kid according to his curiosity, where he asks questions. You're not going to go into the 16-year-old discussion or even the 15-year-old, you know, 14-year-old discussion, but you're going to answer the child according to their curiosity to build a biblical, Godward framework orientation regarding the issues that he's curious about. And that is absolutely appropriate, healthy. And I'll just tell you, I agree with you that makes the discussion much easier when they get to, you know, 11, 12, 13, 14, those stages of puberty where we need to go into a little bit more detail. Very helpful. No magic number, but earlier, often. All right. So categories, right? So what are some of those things that we should be talking to our kids about or teaching our kids about? Because I would say, yes, like situations in life are going to bring up certain topics. We're going to cover those things. But I do have sort of some ideas that I want to make sure by the time kids leave our house or when I know they will be tempted or confronted with certain things that I want to be able to have them prepared for. So how do you think about that in terms of categories generally that we need to give to our kids?
First of all, this just starts with the foundation here is just teaching them about God and life generally. Right? They should be used to us grounding everything we want to teach them in a biblical worldview and in the Word of God. And if they're used to that, then it's not strange for us to say, okay, yeah, we got questions about sex. Like let's talk about the Bible, right? Let's go. And so when we help them, because I mean, honestly, our sexual ethic doesn't make any sense without a biblical worldview. Right? It starts there in that sense. And I think from there, I want to encourage parents to teach their kids about the theology of sex. And then this is one of the things, again, this is one of those things we skip over because we're like, okay, oh, you got practical questions, you know, you got ethical questions, let's jump there. But again, without a theology that answers the ultimate why questions, sometimes we just hand them rules that actually don't sound all that compelling. And they receive them and they're like, okay, but man, the answers I'm getting over at school sound a lot more compelling to me than these rules you're giving me. The only way that they make sense is if we understand why God created sex and sexuality in the first place. And so that's why I put this kind of appendix in as a part of this larger book on the topic, because I want to not only teach adults about that rich theology of sex, but empower them to teach their kids about the blessed purpose of sex, the essential purposes of sex, right? That it's a means of covenantal union, that it's a means of mutual pleasure, that it's an expression of marital love, even that it is something that points to Christ in the church. I want to both understand that and then entrust that to my kids. So first of all, is the theology of sex. I think we also need to not simply stay in the theological, but we need to be the source that teaches them about the anatomy of sex as well. Because kids will inevitably have a lot of questions about the logistics. And if we only give them biblical and theological information, they're going to go somewhere else for the specifics, right? Discussions about the anatomy of sex, I think, we know, like, they carry with them worldview assumptions about sexuality and gender. And I've learned this both from doing it well at times and doing it poorly at times. But I think one of the best things we can do for our kids is to be a trustworthy source of information. If they know that, you know, when I have questions, when I'm confused, when I hear things on the playground, like, my parents are a trustworthy source that will tell me it straight, right? And can help kind of clear the confusion. And I think a lot of that confidence comes from being honest with them about the anatomy, about the logistics of sex, and not avoiding it because we're squeamish and talking with them about it. And again, in age-appropriate ways, right? In ways that match their curiosity, like you said, but also it with clarity. And so if it's the theology, the anatomy, and then I think the third category that I want to think, I also want to teach them ultimately the biblical ethics of sex. So what does God teach about how we, if we were to please him and honor him, should live our lives sexually? And so sexual ethics flow naturally out of his God-ordained purposes, but we need to be the voice for that. Again, not entrusting that even to their Christian school, or not just entrusting that to the church to do, because, you know, the Bible is going to be charged with being prudish or narrow-minded or even bigoted. But that's why, if we're a trustworthy source of information for our kids, and really all those we're discipling, I think that requires being equipped on controversial topics, being willing to talk with our kids about controversial topics. And in fact, actually, like you mentioned before, taking the rise of controversial topics in popular culture, not as an opportunity to bash people or to tell people how dumb the world is, which I think is sometimes our temptation. Like, we disciple our kids in our, like, distaste or disgust for the world. But instead of kind of training them in that, training them to say, okay, well, wait, let's take this as an opportunity to look at what does God say, and how is that so much more beautiful and so much better and so much more glorious?
Yeah, that's really good. A lot of really helpful thoughts that we need to explore in what you just said. As we think about this a little bit more, there are always occasions that come up where our kids are exposed to things that sometimes, man, I wish at that age they wouldn't have been exposed to. And when we think about that exposure to different things, it could come for various reasons. It could come because somebody sins against them. It could come because they went choosing to go after something. It could be because someone introduces them to some idea at school. They saw some image. Maybe they were watching a film at somebody's house or whatever. Lots of different reasons why, you know, our kids could be exposed to different things. And we try our best to try and, you know, censor what they watch or what they see or what comes in. We have to remember the most dangerous thing about our kids in relation to any sinful temptation is themselves. And not that we don't pay attention to what impacts them. We certainly do. We have to guard against those. The Lord tells us to flee from those types of lusts. But we have to manage this appropriately. So as parents, help us to think how we navigate when our kids are exposed to something that's sexual, or even, you know, as they get older and they fall into some sort of sexual sin, how do we navigate addressing those issues with them?
Yeah, you said it well, Dale. I think we start by, unfortunately, in our world, I think we start by expecting it. We start by thinking through proactively how we're going to respond when we have to respond to sexual suffering or sexual sin in their life, not just kind of crossing our fingers and hoping that they won't, right? And hoping we won't ever have to have those conversations. It starts with, in that sense, expecting it. Not in a way that doesn't protect them from it and kind of leaves it, but in a way that recognizes that's the reality of our hearts and the reality of our worlds. And, you know, as I've thought about this, I've had so many conversations. I mean, as a pastor, this is a question I get regularly from parents, especially as a pastor with some older kids, right? Like, I just get questions all the time, right? Like, oh, my kid, like, what do I do? Like, what do I say? And I think there's a lot of practical suggestions like we could give, like listening carefully before you speak, or working hard not to be shocked, or, you know, asking follow-up questions, or getting all the information. I mean, it's really, in a sense, kind of basic biblical counseling stuff. But I'm afraid that in that moment, the last thing we need is a list of about a dozen things to do, because we're not going to remember any of them, right? Like, we're not going to pull out our notes. And so to me, the most helpful thing both to tell parents and for me as a parent, when those things have happened in my home, is to just set my mind and my eyes on Jesus and ask myself, okay, if they had just confessed this, or they just got caught, or we just found this out, if Jesus was the one who caught them, if he was here, if Jesus was the one who exposed them and he was here, how would he talk with them? What would he say right now? And I know this is it could be trite, it could be simplistic, but man, because that moment is so charged as a parent with fear, with disappointment, with sadness, with maybe even some shame, maybe even some regret. I mean, it's charged with so many things that I'm tempted to respond out of my flesh and really out of a way that's centered on me. But that's the one thing Jesus never did. He never responded in a way that was centered on him. He responded in ways that were the genuine love to the peoples, right? So how would Jesus, how would he protect them in this moment? How would he assure them in this moment? How would he forgive them, right? And there's so many different examples that we can go to just meditate on, whether it's him with the woman at the well as he talked with her, and whether it's him with the woman caught in adultery, and there's a group with when somebody gets caught in their sexual sin, especially when one of our kids does, like it does, they expect us, no matter how loving we've been, they expect us to grab a stone and pull our arm back. What does it look like to not condone their sin? That's not what Jesus was doing, right? With that woman, he conveyed to her in gentleness and patience the magnitude of his grace, the magnitude of his redemption and his love. And then in light of the power of his love and grace, he invited her into sanctification. He invited her to sin no more, right? He invited her to live differently because of the grace she'd received. And so just like I wish I had a magic number for an age we could talk to our kids, I wish I had like the magic script for when our kids come to us in those situations. But the thing that's been most helpful for me in those situations in my home has been just to try to take a breath, set my mind on Jesus, and live that out and manifest that towards them as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's very easy for us in our hurt in that situation, right? In our disappointment, maybe in our acceptance of our own failure in some way, that we're reactionary to it. And we have to guard our heart in that way. I can't say that I've been perfect in that, certainly. I wish I could, right? But I can't say that I've been perfect in that. I think you hit the nail on the head and you use a couple of examples that I think are really critical from a biblical perspective to show genuine Christian love. And what we mean by that is not unconditional acceptance of that failure, right? It's I'm not condemning them for the action that's taken place, right? We don't condemn in that way. Jesus made that clear when he was dealing with the woman who was caught in adultery. Christian love is a warning that if you continue in this path, what it will lead to. And I think that's a really critical distinction of what marks that which is Pharisaical in a constant condemnation of the things that have happened versus an outlook biblically of, okay, we can't go back and change this. We have to trust the forgiveness that the Lord gives. But now there's a warning moving forward. As you mentioned, go and sin no more. So how do we help them to grow in that way to where we can guard their heart against, you know, future destruction that they may bring on themselves and recenter them back toward God, his kindness, his forgiveness, but then also the expectation of, you know, let's walk in a way that is protective of the child in the freedom that the Lord has given us in this way. So really helpful there. All right, final thing I'll talk about that I'm curious about. This can be an awkward scenario on the other end of the spectrum, right? We were looking for this magic number at the front end. But what about on the back end of all of this? When do we say, okay, like my job with this child is done? When do I stop talking about these things, you know, sexuality and whatnot with our kids? Is there ever time that you're just like, man, they're too old, this is super awkward? How do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's such a helpful question, because I do think that especially when we get into this like having the talk mentality, then, you know, maybe we have a couple of them early on, but then maybe we have a big one when they're like 12 or 13. And then we like, you know, we wipe our brow, we say, oh, phew, I got through that. Now I don't need to do that again. But that's not reality, right? Like that's not parenting. That's not love, right? And love never stops being a parent. And so while kids in your life are undeniably going to need help and information and protection and grace in their elementary and middle school years, I don't think there's no graduation ceremony that promotes us beyond the need for them to have guidance and wisdom. And even just somebody who's checking in on the sexual area of their life. And saying in that sense, faithful parenting doesn't neglect the topic of sex, but instructs in age appropriate and winsome ways. And that continues on, you know, when they're 16, 17, 18, when they're in their 20s, when they're in their 30s, like just having a faithful parent that says, hey, look, I don't know who else you're talking with this about, but if we've gone this journey together, we've talked about this topic dozens of times. So in fact, I might actually be the most natural person to check in and say, hey, how are you doing? You know, like, where are you struggling? And I think that that's just the manifestation of love that recognizes that this is a part of every human life. This is an aspect of every human life. We were created as sexual beings. And that just like all of us as adults, our kids don't outgrow the need for sanctification and growth in this area for help. Now, again, as kids get older, that's not a license to, you know, be as pushy and to kind of push yourself in where they're not interested to have you. It depends on the kid. It depends on the relationship. But I guess in that sense, I just want to kind of push back against the talk mentality that kind of gets over the hump and then I can kind of let the awkwardness determine my decisions when that's never supposed to lead us, right? Genuine love for our kids at any age is what leads us to care for them in the ways we do.
Scott, this has been so helpful. I, first of all, appreciate your candor and your boldness to step into a topic that's quite awkward for so many people, but also recognizing a need and that many parents are asking, they want to engage their kids, or just sometimes they don't know how to do this. Very helpful conversations, talking points, issues that we need to be paying attention to. Good warning and good wisdom that you've given us to think about today, and specifically in your book, Redeeming Sex in Marriage. This is a part of the appendix, and I would encourage you guys to pick it up. Scott, thanks for helping us out today.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dale.
You're listening to Truth and Love, a podcast of ACBC. Man, I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation today with Scott Mell on this topic about talking to our kids about sex and having teenagers in my house, having conversation that's helpful, prompting, encouraging me to engage in talking with my kids about a subject like this. They're going to hear from it somewhere, and so we need to engage in this way. You know, I got to thinking that we didn't have many resources on this particular topic, but what an encouragement it is. And that made me think, you know what, we ask you guys as listeners to think about topics that we could be addressing, resources that you would like to see here at ACBC that you would love for us to address. You can go to our website and go to our resources page under articles, and what you'll find is a place to submit suggestions for resources. And this could be a question that you have that we can address in particular resources. This could be a topic or some sort of suggestion about a topic that you would like to hear us address in the future, whether that be on a podcast or in blog form or in some sort of more long form essay. And we would love to hear from you on topics just like what we talked about today, where we need to be addressing more that you would love to hear about that would be helpful to think about and address biblically. So bring us your suggestions. We would love that. And you can go and find that submission button at biblicalcounseling.com.